Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times bestselling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
Hey guys, Kevin Cruz here. Welcome to the LeadX Leadership Show, where we help you to stand out and to get ahead at work. Now, as you know, we like to switch things up here, keep it interesting, and to continue that tradition, today on the podcast, instead of me interviewing an expert guest, we're going to have the guest deep dive into their topic. You see, you'll be hearing audio from a LeadX webinar. Now, of course, there are dozens of great webinars on leadership, management, communication, productivity, and more, all archived in the LeadX app. Just visit leadx.org for more information about our webinar archive. So enough on the setup, enough background information. Here is Vanya Mathis to introduce our guest and to hand it over to them. Enjoy.
Welcome to How Great Leaders Create Engaging Cultures That Maximize Results. Today, you're going to learn the three elements of team and organizational culture every leader needs to know, the neuroscience of organizational culture, and best practices leaders can take to develop and maintain an extraordinary team culture. While working on Wall Street, our next guest host observed that differences in the cultures of merging organizations frequently sabotaged post-merger performance. So he decided to study organizational culture in depth and write the books Fired Up or Burned Out and Connection Culture, which he's here to talk more about today. He's spoken about organizational culture at many companies, including Google, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, and NASA. Please welcome Michael Lee Stallard.
Hi, my name is Michael Stallard, and I'm the author of the book Fired Up or Burned Out and our latest book, Connection Culture. So today we're going to talk about how great leaders create an engaging environment and culture that maximizes results. So let's jump right in. First, I want to talk a little bit about just the context of the environment we all live and work in today. And it's a busy life, isn't it? There's so much information coming at us. Just expectations for our work have risen over the years. Many of us commute to our jobs, and it just feels like we have less downtime. We're spending more time working, and just the pace of the world is much faster. So that's an important thing to note, that just the stressors are higher today in life. You know, it may be job stress. It may be personal financial stress that you experience, stress from health issues. Those things have an effect on us and how we perform. And the culture we work in will either help us cope with those issues or make things worse. And it affects our performance. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Also, we're expected to do more. You know, I think in the past, organizations were a little bit more focused on what they were trying to achieve. Now, I think many leaders are super ambitious, where they're probably trying to do too much and could use a little bit more focus. But there's more push for greater and greater productivity, and that creates stress on us. In addition, more people are working alone today. They're spending more time on social media, less time in face-to-face communication. And you'll see, as we talk about later in the presentation, this has an effect on us too, that we need to be aware of and manage our lives so that we perform at the top of our game and create cultures that help us perform at the top of our game. So in the description of this webinar, we talked a little bit about getting into the neuroscience of organizational culture. And we could spend literally a half a day on that topic alone. And what we've done in our work is we've really tried to boil it down to what you need to know. And here's what you need to know. Number one, that chronic loneliness is a stressor. Research shows that about half of Americans are chronically lonely. And I would say there's a higher percentage that just doesn't have enough human connection in their lives to perform at their top of their game. And I'm going to explain why in a little bit. But let me just tick through this list and show you when you're in a state of chronic loneliness, or even you're getting less than the connection you need, it has an effect on you. Number one, it makes you more vulnerable to other stressors in your life so that you feel a more intense negative reaction to those stressors. You feel more pain, in other words. Also, the positive things you have in your life that produce positive emotions have less impact if you are lonely or socially isolated or just not getting the connection, human connection you need, because we're hardwired to connect. So that's something you need to be aware of. Also, if you're getting less than the connection you need, you're going to experience greater feelings of helplessness and threat. You just feel like you have less control over your situation, and that's not good. In addition to that, it impairs the cognitive function so that we're less likely to make rational decisions and we're more likely to make rash decisions. In addition, when we don't get the human connection we need, then it affects our sleep. We don't sleep as deeply, it's not as restorative, and that gives us less energy to meet our obligations, our work obligations, and other things we have to do in our lives. And when we don't have that connection, and also the less sleep, that makes us less likely to exercise and more likely to eat high sugar, high fat foods as a means to cope because we don't feel good. We start looking for dopamine, essentially, which is a chemical that makes us feel better. It's a source of positive emotions, but it has a very short effect and it can become addictive so that people are looking for things that produce dopamine all the time. And so that often leads people to addictive behaviors. You know, sugar is a big one, caffeine, it may be engaging in on the internet, developing some type of internet addiction. Shopping can be a source of dopamine. There are a number of behaviors that are addictive that produce that dopamine that makes us feel better in the short term, but it's very short before we regret that behavior that is not healthy. And then ultimately, getting less than the connection we need in our culture, our environment, can contribute to depression. Although they're different, they're highly correlated. So oftentimes people who don't have that, they're lonely, socially isolated, or just not getting the connections they need, they often struggle with depression. So now the opposite of loneliness and social isolation is rich connection. Rich connections in our lives at home and also in the workplace. And Matthew Lieberman, who's a neuroscientist at UCLA, describes connection as a superpower that makes us happier, smarter, and more productive. And that's certainly true, but it also has additional benefits above and beyond that. Just human connection makes us more resilient to cope with the stress in life. And let me tell you why. Because most of those loneliness, the things that we do, it could be, you know, I talked about being attracted to sugar or caffeine, or even it could be exercise or shopping. Those things produce dopamine. That is one source of positive emotion from a neurotransmitter standpoint. The other source is serotonin. Serotonin comes from relationships. It you know, things in our diet, like having foods in our diet that help produce serotonin. But the primary source is human connection and empathy. When we have that sense of bonding with the people we are, friends and family outside of work, our coworkers, that produces serotonin. And it's a positive emotion. It's more of one of contentment. It lasts longer. It acts to stabilize the nervous system. So we're less likely to experience anxiety, depression, and addiction. So having this serotonin from connection helps make us more resilient to cope with stress. It also protects us from illness, because when our body is in a state of stress response, because we don't have those connections, it overallocates blood, glucose, and oxygen to the fight or flight systems. In other words, the heart, the lungs, the big muscles, and it underallocates those same resources to the part of the brain called the hippocampus, the digestive system, the immune system, and the reproductive system. So those systems I just mentioned are getting less of the resources, blood sugar, blood glucose, and oxygen, that then they need to really be healthy and perform at a higher level for a long period of time. And if we're stuck in that state of stress response, it'll shave years off our lives as well as affect our performance. So in addition to all these benefits I've listed, scientists have learned, and it was actually about 15 years ago that a group of scientists discovered this enzyme called telomerase. And one of the things that releases telomerase in our body is human connection. And what they found is it helps protect our chromosomes and heal the chromosomes from damage that's done as a result of stress. So it's amazing how human connection, truly is a superpower that helps us in so many ways. And we are hardwired to connect as human beings. We need this in our culture. Yet many people are struggling with this today. You know, I think part of it could be just, you know, spending too much time on the internet, on a smartphone, with working on tasks, but not really connecting. And so it's an important aspect of culture to make sure that we have a balance. We need tasks and results from our work, but we also need that human connection to stabilize us and help us perform at the top of our game for a sustained period of time. And it's no surprise that in research by Julianne Holt Lundstedt, where she did a study of the studies of loneliness and connection, she found that connection was associated with a 50% reduction in the risk of early death. And that would make sense when you look at all those other benefits that I just described that come from the superpower of connection. And when you consider just the dangers of social isolation and loneliness. So now we've come away from this section on essentially on neuroscience to understand that our culture that we're in has to have a high degree of connection, but also it has to have aspects of tasks that produce results. You need that combination to really perform at the top of your game for a sustained period of time. Now, this is actually taken at a recent workshop that I taught. In fact, you can see me there in the background. I'm blurry and I'm smiling. And this is a photograph taken from one of the exercises that we have people do. And just look at the faces in that shot. You can see, what do you see? You see energy, you see enthusiasm. And that's what happens when you have connection. It makes us enthusiastic and energetic. It makes us more likely to cooperate with the people. It just bonds us together so that everybody pulls in the same direction. So this is a helpful formula that I want to share with you. And let me just explain this. Here's what we have found in our research is that almost all leaders, if they last for any period of time, are intentional about developing task excellence and results because we're paid to get things done. But the great leaders do something in addition to task excellence, and that is they develop relationship excellence and task excellence together. And it's that combination that produces sustainable, superior performance. Now, organizations can focus on tasks and results and not really develop a connection, a culture where people connect and you have relationship excellence. But the problem is it's not sustainable because when people don't feel connected, after a while, they stop giving their best efforts. They stop aligning their behavior with the team or the organization's goals. They stop fully communicating or thinking about how to improve the organization. In other words, they're not engaging in the whole process of innovation. And that acts as a drag on organizational performance. As we dug deeper into this formula, what we found was leaders who developed relationship excellence and task excellence developed what we call a culture of connection. And you see it, the model in this diagram. We have three core elements: vision, value, and voice. And notice that value is in the middle. We're going to unpack these in just a minute, but let me give you an example. Now, this is kind of an unusual example. Most of you, I imagine, are in business or government, maybe social sector organizations, but this is an example from a rock band. And then I'm going to shift and we're going to look more at the corporate world. So you may recognize this is the rock band U2. And they were formed in the mid-70s when they were just 14 and 15-year-old boys. And at that time, they were not very good. They it wasn't unusual for them to be laughed at or booed when they performed. I think they were probably pretty amusing to watch. But they had some problems. Number one, Bono, the lead singer, who you see in the middle in this photograph, he tended to think of himself as a punk rocker, so he tended to scream more than sing. And Adam Clayton, the bass player, who you see on the right, he looked the part of a rock star even when he was young. However, he didn't know how to play bass guitar, and he couldn't keep a rhythm. So there were some serious problems. He owned a bass guitar, so he just jumped in and kind of fake it till you make it approach. And eventually he figured it out. But and the band got better. And over time, you see that the band, they have moved from this band that people laughed at to today. They have won more Grammy Awards than any band in history. And they surpassed the Rolling Stones record for the highest revenue producing concert series in history. So they have been phenomenally successful. How did that happen? Well, Bono says that if you look at us, the way we work together is more extraordinary than our music. In other words, he's talking about their culture and the things they do that really create this strong sense of connection. Number one, they split their economic profits 5 equal ways between the 4 band members you see on this in this photograph and their manager. They also, Bono says that our music is, we're performers and entertainers, but we're more than that. We have a message. Our music is about human rights and social justice. These are things that are important to us. And so we're not just performers and musicians. We're like traveling salesmen. We have a message that we're trying to promote through our music and through our influence when we're off the stage. And that helps draw them together. Secondly, you see, they've really supported each other through the years. When the band first started, within a year afterward, Larry Mullen Jr., the drummer you see in this photograph in the back, he was actually the youngest member of the band. And about that time, his mother was hit and killed in a car accident. It turns out that Bono's mother had died within the previous 2 years. She was attending her father's funeral and had a cerebral hemorrhage and collapsed. Now, Bono grieved the loss of his mother, Iris, alone because his father and brother were so grief-stricken. They really didn't connect and help each other as much through that. So he knew that it was painful to grieve the loss of a parent alone. And so Bono reached out to Larry and said, I know what you're going through and you're not going to go through this alone. And it created this strong bond between these two young men at that time that's very strong even today. After the band got going for a while, they improved. I think people stopped laughing and booing at them. Eventually, they got an offer from A&M Records, a big recording contract. But there was a condition in the offer that they replace Larry as the drummer. Well, Bono told the record company executive to shove it. You know, it was all of us or none of us. He had Larry's back and was not about to let Larry be pushed out of the band. And so they persisted. Eventually, they got other recording offers and went on to be wildly successful. You also see that they've just supported each other through other trials that they've experienced in life. Edge went through divorce. The guys were there to help him through that difficult time. Adam, who was living kind of a fast life, developed a drug and alcohol addiction. In fact, he showed up at one concert so stoned he couldn't perform. And the guys were really upset about that because they have a passion for excellence. And this was a concert they were actually filming. So that fortunately, they had someone in their entourage who could step in and play his part. But it was really a litmus test for them. And they adopted the motto that we're all going to get through this alive. They didn't throw Adam overboard. And they really helped Adam get through his drug and alcohol addiction. I think he's really flourishing today when you look at pictures of him. He just seems to be in a great place. And then even Bono has gone through some difficult times. I think of one in particular where he received an anonymous note that said, if you sing the song Pride, which is about the Reverend Martin Luther King, most of us know it as In the Name of Love. And if you play that song or perform that song in the concert, I'm going to put a effing bullet through your head. And the FBI told the band, this was, the concert was going to be in the United States. And the FBI told the band that they believed it was a credible threat. But the guys decided they weren't going to back down. They went on stage, they performed that song. And Bono, as he was singing the lyrics, in that song, there was a phrase about the bullet that rang out in the Memphis sky that killed Dr. King. And before he sang that, he closed his eyes. And when he opened his eyes, to his surprise, Adam was standing in front of him to protect his friend from harm. Now, I'm not saying you have to take a bullet for a colleague at work. However, it just shows how this amazing connection and brotherhood that these four guys have together. Another thing that's really helped them and connected them is the way they make decisions. They, if somebody strongly opposes a particular direction, then they won't do it. And Bono says this can be frustrating at times because oftentimes we don't agree, and it can take more time to work through our agreements. However, we believe that it produces the best results. And who's to argue with their track record? They have been wildly successful. So you can see how this band, U2, has really thrived over, they've been together all their adult lives, which it's rare for most bands to do that. In fact, most megastars take 50% of the profits, and yet Bono takes an equal share with his three bandmates and his manager. You just see how he, as a leader, is connecting and encouraging connection among the band members. So let's go back and kind of deconstruct this culture and think about it from what we talked about earlier, vision, value, voice. Okay, let me give you the definition first. So vision exists when everyone in the organization is motivated by the mission, united by the values, and proud of the reputation. So you think about U2. I talked about, their music is about human rights and social justice. And for them, that's their vision. That's what they focus on, that their music really has meaning. That's the vision part for them. Secondly, value. And value is defined as when everyone in the organization, they understand the needs of people, they appreciate their positive, unique contributions, and they help others achieve their potential. And you see it in U2 in terms of how they value one another and sharing their economic profits. They've had each other's backs through difficult times in life. Another thing that I didn't point out when I shared their story earlier is just how often you see Bono trying to shine the spotlight of attention. And he gets a lot of attention, certainly. He's an interesting character. But he shines the spotlight of recognition on his bandmates. He's always talking about, in positive terms, about their character, about their competence as musicians. And, he's their number one fan club. He really loves those bandmates. His mates, as he would say. And, they, as a result, they have this strong sense of value. They're really in it together. Doesn't mean they're perfect, but, they have a great connection culture. And then the third element is voice that you find in a connection culture. And that exists when everyone in the organization seeks the ideas of others. So just think about this. This respect, it reflects humility that as a leader, I don't have a monopoly on ideas, that I need to seek and consider the opinions of others. And then in this culture of connection where voice exists, people share their ideas and opinions honestly. I share what I truly believe, not what I think you want to hear. And that can be dangerous and sometimes painful, but there's a commitment to honesty in these types of cultures where connection exists. And because there is the risk that people's feelings are hurt sometimes when we have this dialogue and communication. The people in a connection culture where voice exists, they're very intentional about safeguarding relational connections. So if I say something that, and we all say things that sometimes we regret just in the heat of the moment. And if I sense that I've hurt someone's feelings, I'm very proactive about reaching out to them to say, I'm sorry I said that. I didn't mean to hurt your feelings. To really apologize or the consequences of what I said. And also, if somebody apologizes to me, I give them the benefit of the doubt. They really didn't mean to hurt me. It was just, we all say things we don't mean sometimes. And so they're very intentional about that, and that helps preserve those connections. So let me just give you a couple of, we gave you a little mini case study in the Rock Band U2. That's definitely an unusual one. Let me share a case study from one of our client organizations, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. Now, my wife, Katie, who works with us as a partner at our firm, Katie was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2003 and advanced ovarian cancer in 2004. And at that time, her chances of survival were less than 10%. And as you can imagine, that was a time where we experienced a lot of anxiety and stress. Katie and I have two daughters who were just 12 and 10 at that time. So I can tell you that I struggled with the thought of losing my beloved best friend, Katie, and also that our daughters would lose this really wonderful mother and that Katie may not see the girls grow up. And that, just thinking about that, took me to a place of sadness that I had never experienced before. And we knew we had to be aggressive to treat this cancer. So after having her initial rounds of chemotherapy at our local hospital in Greenwich, Connecticut, which is part of the Yale New Haven system, we decided to go to the world's oldest cancer center, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in Midtown Manhattan in New York City. And I'll never forget our first trip there. We were walking down the sidewalk and this doorman locked his eyes on Katie and greeted her like a returning friend. Now, this is in New York City where nobody makes eye contact. So I was a little taken aback. And then I realized that he recognized Katie was wearing a wig. So he was being intentional about reaching out and connecting with a cancer patient who was coming into the doors of Sloan Kettering. And we entered in the reception area, and the receptionist was calling everyone honey. That's also very unusual in Manhattan, as you can imagine. And the security people, the administrative people were wonderful. They were helpful and friendly. And then we met our oncologist, Dr. Marty Hensley. She spent an hour with us just educating us about the treatment options, answering our long list of questions. Dr. Hensley was upbeat and optimistic. And you know, even though that day when I was walking down the sidewalk, I was expecting to find a culture of death and dying, I discovered a culture of life and living. And it was not like the cultures I had seen working most of my career on Wall Street. It really took me by surprise. And it just made me more optimistic that we could get Katie through this difficult season ahead, even though the odds were long that she would survive. And this year, actually in January, last month, we celebrated Katie's 15th year of being cancer-free from ovarian cancer. Now, she did have one additional incident of breast cancer, so she's a three-time cancer survivor now, but now she's healthy and thriving, and we teach workshops together. So when I was at Sloan Kettering, one time when Katie was having a chemo treatment, I had discovered, I just came upon a group of people who were talking about they were talking about an employee engagement survey results in a lounge. They worked there at Sloan Kettering and they didn't pay attention to me. And thank goodness, because I was able to hear them say how much they love their mission to provide the best cancer care anywhere that you see below this logo in front of you. They talked about how much they love the people they work with and their patients' caregivers. And I just had never seen a group that was so connected and so committed to what they did. And it's no surprise that Sloan Kettering has been named as one of the top two cancer centers in the United States for close to the last 30 years. So they've been wildly successful. And you see that vision, value, voice in their culture. They value one another. They value their patients. They make a huge investment. We actually do training there for first-time supervisors in ambulatory care, and we help them create a connection culture. It's amazing how the new employees who are coming into Sloan Kettering, they spend about 3 weeks in training. That's a huge investment, and they're going back from time to time providing additional training that really connects them in groups and cohorts of people they get to know well. It provides them new skills. They really invest in their people, and you see the strong culture they have there. The other thing is that they, as I stumbled upon people talking about that employee engagement survey, that just shows they give their people a voice to express their opinions and ideas. And they realize that no one has a monopoly on good ideas. So vision, value, voice really keeps creates this powerful connection that helps organizations thrive. So we've talked about you two. We've talked about a cancer center. Let's talk about a totally different organization, but one that I love, Costco. My family makes fun of me because I can wander around Costco forever. It's like a treasure hunt. And Costco has a phenomenal culture. They have been wildly successful. I had the pleasure of speaking to all their warehouse managers worldwide, and they've bought copies of Connection Culture for their warehouse managers because they have a connection culture. And Jim Senegal, the co-founder, longtime CEO, he described their culture to me as do the right thing, which means we obey the law. We take care of our members, which are their customers, because it's a membership warehouse. They take care of their members. Third, they take care of their employees. They respect their suppliers. And when they do those following four things, they are financially successful so that they can reward their share owners. And that describes their culture. Now, that's a great vision for them. And it's interesting that their vision really isn't as much about, say, you know, provide the best cancer care anywhere. It's less about mission and a little bit more about values, about how we do what we do, including taking care of our employees, respecting our suppliers, making sure we follow the law. So you see in the Costco culture that they truly value people. Oftentimes, Wall Street analysts will complain to Costco that you're paying your employees too much. You're giving them benefits that are far too generous. But the leaders at Costco say, we believe this is the culture that has made us successful. We don't want to be here just for the next 5 years. We want to be here for the next 50 years. And so we know that if we take care of our employees, number one, it's the right thing to do, and it helps us be financially successful as well. And when you understand Costco's business, and you see some of those operational metrics, like their year-to-year retention of employees is 95%, which is phenomenal compared to most of their competition. They do have a huge economic benefit from doing that, but they do it because it's the right thing to do. And then finally, they give people a voice. When I was speaking to Costco's warehouse managers worldwide in Seattle, they had part of the program, they had people sharing videos from all around the world about innovative ideas they had come up with that will make Costco more efficient, will reduce their costs and improve their value that they're providing to their members. And it was amazing. These ideas were literally from everywhere around the world. And it was wonderful to see the people. It was, you know, women, people of color. It was just such a mix of people from all around the world who were providing ideas, and they had been celebrated by capturing their idea in video and sharing it with all the warehouse managers worldwide. So that shows that they're seeking and considering the ideas of others. That's the voice element. Vision, value, voice equals connection. Very powerful. Now, there's a deeper layer to what we're talking about, and that is that, let me just take you through this diagram. I call it the character connection thrive chain. A PhD student in the last 2 years did his dissertation research on this chain, which he called the connection value chain, and found empirical evidence to really support that this is true. This really does happen. And let me just take you through this, starting on the left. Now, these are those terms you see under 24 character strengths. They're also, you can think of them as values. They're universal character strengths that give individuals a survival advantage. And when we started looking at the research from the field that discovered these, it's called positive psychology, we could see that, oh my gosh, they've identified vision, value, voice just in more discrete, more atomized terms. So when you cluster these character, strengths, or values, they really fall into three areas, which is what we saw in the cultures: vision, value, voice. Let me give you an example, just using some leaders we've studied or know. We don't know Steve Jobs, but we've studied him. And I think Steve Jobs, you know, he wasn't the greatest connector in many respects, but when it comes to vision, he may be one of the best connectors of our age. And just think about it. He, you know, he helped create that Think Different campaign. He was motivated to be an innovator who was going to change the world. He was all about vision. And he had an appreciation. If you look at those character strengths that support vision on the left, in the upper left-hand corner, appreciation of beauty and excellence, Steve Jobs designed, or he had approval for all the designs of Apple products. I remember reading an article in the Wall Street Journal that said he was involved in approving the design of the staircases in the Apple retail stores. How many CEOs do that? He just has a real passion for beauty and excellence. And, you know, he's very future oriented. He had this hope that they were going to change the world. He was a leader in getting people to rally around that vision. He did not give up. He persevered. He was very disciplined about doing that. You know, he saw this as important. It was kind of part of his spirituality. He wanted to contribute to the world and make a positive mark. And the guy had phenomenal energy, or what the positive psychologists call zest. So you can see that those character strengths support the element of vision that we talked about earlier. So the next cluster of character strengths: fairness, forgiveness, gratitude, humor, kindness, love, social intelligence, teamwork. That supports the character strength of value, or valuing people. And I think of, you know, Jim Sinegal is a great example. When you see Jim Sinegal of Costco interacting with people at Costco, and it doesn't matter if they're, you know, a cashier or a greeter or the now CEO who replaced him, Craig Jelinek, he just connects with people. He loves people, and especially people who work at Costco and Costco members. So he values people. You just see it in the way he treats them and how he has led Costco to really take good care of their employees, despite the pressures from Wall Street always nagging at them to reduce employee compensation and benefits. The third cluster of character strengths: bravery, creativity, curiosity, honesty, humility, judgment, love of learning, perspective, prudence. Those are character strengths that support voice. And one of my favorite leaders who I had the pleasure of doing interviews with was Anne Mulcahy, who was she became CEO of Xerox in 2000 at a time when Xerox was this close to bankruptcy. And what Anne did was, you know, her lawyers wanted her to throw it into Chapter 11 to just keep the creditors at bay, but she refused to do that. She got on the road. She met with employees. She kind of put her cards on the table to say, here's what I think. What do you think's right, wrong, or missing from my thinking? She collected the best thinking and implemented the best ideas, giving people credit where credit was due. And it just energized Xerox. And Anne pulled off leading this turnaround that's become, some people have called it a miracle that she saved that company. And it truly is. She's an amazing leader for all of us to emulate. So vision, value, voice, there it is. The 24 character strengths support vision, value, voice, and that meets these handful of universal needs that must be met for people to thrive long-term in the workplace. Let me just go through those briefly. Respect, recognition, belonging, autonomy, personal growth, meaning, and progress. Okay, respect. Let me describe it this way. When you first come onto a team, they don't know you. They don't know how good you are at what you do, but at a minimum, you expect them to be respectful because you're a human being. If they're, you know, calling you names or intentionally ignoring you, patronizing you, things like that, disrespecting you, that'll make you unhappy and you can't perform your best if people are treating you that way. And as you're on the team longer, if they respect you, and you've had a chance to show what you do, you expect to see some recognition that someone will say, hey, Todd, that was an amazing website you created. And if nobody says anything about your work, you start to wonder, you know, does anybody see what I'm doing? Do they appreciate the effort that I'm putting into my work? If you don't get that, that's not healthy. If you get that, that's going to make you feel more connected to the team. And as you're there longer, you start to develop friendships and people you know well, and you have their back and they have yours. And it just makes you feel good to work on a team like that. We're just not all competing with one another. We're really competing. We're working together to compete with someone in the outside of the firm, an organization on the outside of the firm. And that when we have that type of culture, it brings out the best in us. So notice those three needs are all based on relationships: respect, recognition, belonging. The next few needs are called task mastery needs. The first one is autonomy. In other words, we need the freedom to do our work. If we have a supervisor who's, you know, always just, you know, focusing on the details and they're overmanaging us and looking over our shoulder all the time, we can't thrive. If there's too much bureaucracy or red tape, it's hard to really perform at the top of our game when we have that. But if we have that autonomy, that also helps us feel more connected. The next factor is personal growth. In other words, we're in a role that's a good fit with our strength. Psychologists call this optimal experience, or flow is another term that's used for it. And I think of it this way: when we're doing something that we do well, and there's the right degree of challenge, it's not over-challenging so that we're stressed, and it's not under-challenging so that we're bored, but it's in that sweet spot of challenge, then we feel a sense of connection to our work. In fact, so much so that we lose ourselves a sense of time, and time flies by when we're working. You know, it's the end of the day and you're like, oh my gosh, it feels like it's 2 p.m. I can't believe it's the end of the day already. I'd like to stay longer and keep working, but I need to get home. So you get the idea. I think most of you have probably experienced that personal growth. And then in addition, we need meaning. If our work helps people in some way, or we're excited about it. Maybe I think of somebody who works at a company that makes guitars like Fender or Gibson guitars, and they love music. Maybe they're a musician. Then that's going to be meaningful to them. And that also helps them thrive over the long term. They're going to be more likely to push through obstacles that they run into. They're going to have more energy. They're going to have more commitment to their work, and it just helps them thrive. And that has to be coupled with progress. So it can't be just, you know, we're doing work that we expect will help people. We need to see that it actually does help people. And that's the progress element. And so those needs, when they're met, make people feel connected. They feel connected to their supervisor, to the people they work with, and to their work. And that helps them thrive. And that moves us to the next column to the right, which is individuals who have connection. And think back to what I talked about earlier. You know, they have serotonin, but they also have dopamine and other neurotransmitters and hormones that help them thrive. And so you see greater wellness, greater well-being, greater trust, cooperation, and all those benefits that are listed. And no surprise, if individuals in the organization are thriving, then the organization, move one column to the right, is also thriving. So you see employee engagement is higher, strategic alignment, better decision-making, all of these benefits that help the organization thrive, or team thrive, or department thrive. And by the way, this applies to your home too. This isn't just work. This is all of life is organized like this, because this is the way we're wired as human beings to connect. Okay, the benefits of connection culture, and I mentioned these briefly earlier, but let me just tick through them one more time. Number one, when you feel connected in your culture, you have a cognitive advantage. It's the superpower that makes you smarter, happier, and more productive. Secondly, when you feel connected, you give your best effort as a human being. That's called employee engagement. Employees who feel connected also align their behavior with the team and the leaders and the organization's goals. So in some organizations, you find that people maybe are engaged, but they're going in different directions. So the organization, as a result, doesn't make as much progress. But when you have engagement and alignment, you really have powerful progress towards your objectives and results. Also, employees who feel connected communicate more, and that helps decision makers make better decisions. And finally, they care about the organization, so they devote time and think about how do we improve our work. And that's innovation. It's another way of saying innovation. Those are five distinct performance advantages that add up to a powerful performance advantage in total for the team, department, or organization, or a competitive advantage if you want to think of it that way. So now I want to get into a few important personal practices, because as a leader, you can't give what you don't have. So you need to make sure that, number one, you have connection in your life, and that will help you lead people from a place of strength. Okay, and this is a challenge today. Many leaders are under a lot of stress, and if they don't have the connection in their life that's producing that neurotransmitter, serotonin, they're going to be on shaky ground. They're not going to be the strongest, most resilient leaders that are really required to get through. Sometimes the things we're trying to do are very hard and difficult, and it takes resilience as a leader and wisdom about creating a connection culture to achieve the ends that we're desiring. So you need to make sure that as a leader that you boost personal connection so that you will thrive. And number one, that means developing a connection mindset, which is part of what we've been doing today, that you now know that you need connection to thrive. That's the connection mindset, that it's a superpower and you want it. Second, you need to develop the courage to connect, because sometimes people have had some painful experiences in life from a relationship standpoint, and you know, building supportive relationships can be scary to some people. You know, I was one of those people. It's, you know, just some things happened in my past where, you know, I could build a network, but that's not real supportive connections. You know, that's a good thing too, certainly. But I was reluctant to really open myself up and be open and develop supportive relationships, you know, other than my wife, Katie. And so that's important too, to have that courage to connect. And one thing I advise leaders is never worry alone. You know, sometimes we, and this is part of our American culture, that, you know, we can do it all on our own, but the truth is you can't do it all on your own. You're just wired for connection, and you dysfunction when you have less than connection in your life. And so when you're running into difficulties, as you will when you're trying to accomplish great things, make sure that you have confidants that you can process your life with, your troubles. And it could be challenges in the workplace. It could be challenges outside the workplace, but you need someone who you care about and who cares about you. And by the way, it goes both ways. It can't be just they care about you, but you don't really care about them. It doesn't work then. But if you build a supportive relationship where you care about them, they care about you, then it will help when you engage in conversation to talk through the challenges you're facing. It actually helps keep the brain activity in the prefrontal cortex, the front part of your brain where you make rational decisions. If you don't have that, if you don't have those conversations and you're feeling overwhelmed from the stressors and obstacles in your life, there's a high probability that your brain activity will shift to the more the midbrain and the amygdala, where there's a higher percentage that you'll make a higher likelihood that you'll make rash decisions that are more emotion-based than rational-based. So never worry alone. The next point is try to develop a group of friends or confidants who you can process your week with on a weekly basis, your highs and lows. You know, share the positive things. It's good for us. Positive psychology shows that being grateful. You know, I try to think of three things every day. I was doing it this morning. You know, I was thankful for Katie and just what a wonderful person and partner and wife she is. I was thinking about my daughters and how grateful I am, just how they're thriving in life in their 20s and exciting to see them doing great things and just the really wonderful people they are. I was thinking about what a privilege it is to do this work. Those are the three things I happen to be thinking about this morning. And just taking time to pause and reflect on those actually produces serotonin that helps settle our nervous system so that we're more resilient. And so we need those confidants that we need to be thinking about what we're grateful for. And we also need those confidants to process our highs, share our highs, and our lows with. And when they feel our joy from the highs, it connects us because we have mirror neurons in our brain. And it actually, when they feel our joy, it enhances our joy. And when we feel their joy, it enhances their joy, and it produces serotonin. So the other part is when we feel their pain, it diminishes their pain. And it also produces serotonin. So it's important to attune to their emotions and try to sense what they're feeling. And when you do that, it has a more powerful effect of connecting you and helping increase their joy and diminish their pain. Francis Hesselbein, who's been a friend and mentor and one of my heroes, Francis turned around the Girl Scouts of the USA. Peter Drucker once called her the greatest leader he had ever worked with, which is really saying something since he had worked with Alfred Sloan, who started General Motors, and Dwight D. Eisenhower. So pretty impressive that he thought Francis was the best leader he ever met. And I remember one time when Francis turned to me and said, "To serve is to live." And boy, that just describes her life. When we serve others, it connects us. And the amazing thing is, not only do people feel grateful when you help them in some way, but you benefit too. Psychologists call it the helper's high is the term. It boosts your positive emotions. So if you're having a down day, find somebody to help. When you could be, volunteering in the community and helping people in some way, even going into schools, there are many programs that help kids who are struggling just by reading a book to them. So there are a lot of ways to serve that really help us be more resilient. Now, how do you operationalize a connection culture? We're getting toward the end of our presentation and time together. So let me get into how you do this step by step. And this is a little bit simplified, but I want to give you a big picture view. And then you can always go deeper. I'm going to give you an offer at the end to get some additional resources where you can go deeper. Number one, it's important to have training like we're doing today to develop a connection mindset and to understand the attitudes, uses of language, and behaviors that are connecting. That's number one. Because, the way we think does affect our behavior, and that's all about creating a connection mindset. And then it's important for us to also annually assess the subcultures we're in. Now, a lot of employee engagement surveys are all about connection, and, they work perfectly fine. We've developed our own culture assessment that looks at subcultures and measures do people feel connected or disconnected? And then we break it down further, and they feel disconnected because they're being controlled, or are they just around people who are indifferent to who they are as people, or what we call a culture of indifference. And so it's important to assess. And when you assess, that helps you determine what leaders or managers need help developing connection cultures and which leaders and managers are really good at it, because you may be able to pair them up, pair a manager up who needs help with someone who's strong, and they can become peer mentors to each other. Which is my next point that I got to. You can see it in this bullet now, exactly what I just said. And then it also helps to identify the people who are doing a great job connecting and just celebrate them. Celebrate their attitudes, their language, their behaviors that are creating a connection culture. And the team, celebrate the teams that are creating connection cultures. And it just sends a powerful message throughout your organization. So a couple last comments before I wrap it up. A lot of people are working alone today. And as you can guess, they are especially vulnerable to not having enough connection in their lives. And so if you are a remote worker or you're leading people who are working remotely, I hope you can share this presentation with them or send them a copy of Connection Culture. I'd like that. And I'm going to give you some of the sample chapters so you could share that with them as well. But they need to know, they need to develop that connection mindset, because it's dangerous if you're working alone. You need to make sure that you get time in your calendar to connect with people, whether it's getting out for a coffee break or taking lunch with someone or joining exercise classes where you're mixing it up with other people. You need those relationships. And if you're just working remotely, that's not good. It's not going to be good for your health, and it's not going to be good for your performance. Secondly, when you look at younger workers today, the data shows that they're the loneliest. In fact, the loneliest people, according to Cigna research that they did earlier this year, they studied 20,000 American adults, and other research is consistent with this. They found that the youngest generations experience the highest loneliness. And then as you go out over time, loneliness declined. So young workers are really longing for connection. When you create connection cultures, you're going to attract the best young workers and retain them and engage them so that they'll give their best efforts. They'll experience joy at work from the connection, and it'll have a positive effect on your performance. Now, I mentioned some of the free resources. That concludes the substantive part of my presentation. And what we'll do is we will send you sample chapters from our book, Connection Culture, and we'll also put you on the monthly Connection Culture email newsletter that has case studies, new research that's coming out about connection or the lack thereof. We have practices in the newsletter. I think you'll really enjoy it. We have very few people who unsubscribe to it. It's been amazing how just to see the retention from the newsletter. So give it a try. I think you really like it. And the way to do that is send an email to katie@connectionculture.com. That's Katie, K-A-T-I-E, at connectionculture.com. Put in the subject line, LeadX, and then in the email, put your name and your email address that you would like the email newsletter to go to, and we'll send it to you along with sample chapters from the Connection Culture book. So that really wraps up our time together. And I appreciate and I'm grateful for this opportunity to share our work that's really truly been life-changing for me, for someone who really struggled with not being lonely, but just crowding out time in my life for relationships until I dysfunctioned and started not feeling well and developing addictions to cope. So discovering this has been life-changing for me, truly. And I hope it will be for you too. And I hope you'll think about the people in your environment, whether it's in the workplace, in your community, your family, that you can share some of this with if you see that they may be struggling with not having enough connection in their lives. So I hope that you will mark this day, begin connecting, and just watch what happens. I promise you'll experience greater productivity, greater prosperity, and greater joy that comes from having an abundance of connection in your life. Thank you, and I wish each and every one of you all of the very best.
Friends, if you like this episode of the LeadX Leadership Podcast, please take a minute, leave a rating on iTunes or Stitcher. Ratings are invaluable for attracting new listeners. And I like to convert those listeners into leaders because, you know, I'm on a mission to spark 100 million leaders in the next 10 years. And if you want to become the boss everyone fights to work for and nobody wants to leave, check out the LeadX platform with Coach Amanda at leadx.org. And if you have 10 or more managers who could use some binge-worthy training, send me an email at info@leadx.org, L-E-A-D-X.O-R-G, and we'll talk about getting you set up with a totally free pilot for those managers. See if they like it. If they don't, that's fine. We go away. Part as friends. But if they love it, you've just found yourself a new resource for them. Remember, leadership is influence. You're always leading. How are you going to lead today?